KTWH LP 99.5 FM, Two Harbors, Minnesota. And you are listening to What's Happening. Calling in to the studio is Matt Huddleston, our County Administrator for Lake County. Good morning, Matt. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, very well. And it's a brisk morning out there, but things are good in Two Harbors. And it's time for an update about what's going on with Lake County. I know that life continues on despite pandemic and all other crises. And so let's start by talking about the Thank You with Blue initiative. Do you want to tell us what that's about?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. Lake County Public Health and Cooperative Light and Power, they've partnered on Project Blue, which is to honor our frontline workers who have been working to keep our community safe during the COVID-19 pandemic. So the week of January 24th to 31st, which is next week, we're asking residents to illuminate their homes with blue light bulb or string lights.
Oh.
And there are places where we have some light bulbs available for free, courtesy of Co-op Light and Power. So I just wanted to list those spots and times for people if they want to go pick them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at Super One today from 4 to 6 p.m. or tomorrow 10 to noon. And then at Zupp's Food Market in Silver Bay today, 4 to 6 p.m. or tomorrow, 10 to noon. And then at the Finland Co-op anytime before January 24th. And then if you're not able to make it there to get a free one, they're certainly available for purchase at Seagren's Hardware in Two Harbors or Julie's True Value in Silver Bay. And it's a regional effort to do that. So we've done a couple. We're doing some lights here on the courthouse and the service center here in Two Harbors, and I think up at the solid waste to a rescue squad as well.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for, I don't know how big a part you had in that, but just nice to be doing positive things and remembering so many good things going on. And one of them certainly is the dedication of all our frontline workers, as you say. So hopefully we'll see a lot of nice blue light. And tell me again the dates, just so that that gets cemented in everyone's brains.
Yep, so it's next week, January 24th. To January 31st.
All right. And any blue lights after dark, welcome.
Yep.
Great. All right. Now, we're going to be talking about this, the vaccines, in about an hour with Greg Ruberg. But I don't know if you have anything to add as a county person, Matt. We know it's on the top of everyone's minds.
No, I think, I can let Greg talk about that and go through the details. I'm certainly not working on that as hard as he is and our public health staff here at Lake County. So I was just prepared to give some updates. I know it's on probably a lot of people's mind in terms of when they're going to be able to get one and how fast we're going to get the vaccines. But it's just a lot of unknown. I know those folks are working really hard, and I can let Greg give that update on when you might expect to get one, how the priorities are rolling out, and how many people we've vaccinated. And so they're doing some good work, and that's a top priority of us right now in our public health and health and human services staff to get the vaccines rolled out and do the best we can working with the, seems to be ever-changing information on
how
it's going to go and how much we're going to get. So I can let Greg take that on, no problem.
Yep. It's just, like you say, it's an ever-changing beast. And he has tackled it pretty much every week for the last few months. we'll just see what he has to say this week. All right, let's move on. There is a small business nonprofit grant relief out there. Tell us about that, Matt.
Yep, so the state just recently approved some additional relief funds, and each county received some dollars, and we got $256,250. That is in our hands now, and we put together some grant procedures and an application, and it's currently out on our website, and we try to distribute it in many different formats and ways so it gets out in everybody's hands that could be eligible. And the deadline for that grant is February 1st. So really you got a little more than a week to check out that grant and get it in. And what we are prioritizing with that grant, we're prioritizing entities that have been required to close or their operations have been reduced or been at reduced capacity at some point due to one of the governor's executive orders. But other small business or nonprofits can apply even if they didn't have that full impact. But you do have to have an impact from a governor's order during the pandemic of some sort. Not necessarily do you have to have been closed or had to reduce had to operate at reduced capacity, but you have to have an impact mm-hmm. from COVID, from a governor's executive order to be eligible for those funds. And the funds must be used for operating expenses during the pandemic.
So fair enough.
I encourage people to get out there and look at that. We have a committee that's going to review them. We did not set a grant amount on purpose. I think we wanted to leave it flexible for entities to tell us what they need, what they need to have an impact on their business. And the committee will look through that and make recommendations to the county board. And ultimately, the county board will adopt or approve the funding and the grants. And we have to have the awards done by March 15th. And we have to have the money out the door by April 1st. Those are requirements from the state.
Mm. So efficiency is required. So you can trust that if you can get your application in on time, it's going to come back in a very timely way, it sounds like.
Correct. So we're just trying to encourage people to look at the app and get it in on time. Certainly if there's additional funds or if applications come in after that deadline, we'll review them on a case-by-case basis if there's still funding and time to be able to move them forward. But if you want to be in the initial pile and ranked and reviewed by the committee, just encourage you to take a look at that and get it in. And feel free to call me here at the county if you have questions about that application, and I'll be able to try to answer them the best I can.
Can you,
what we're looking at.
While you're on, Matt, why don't you just give us the best way to reach you?
Best way to reach me is 218-834-8320. That's calling here into the office. Or you can absolutely email me. You can find my email on the Lake County website. It's matthew.huddleston@co.lake.mn.us. And just feel free to email me or give me a shout, and I will try to help you out the best I can.
Yeah, and I will vouch for you, Matt, that Matt is very approachable, and he's not your typical or your, some people characterize government employees as hard or bureaucratic. You're not like that at all. Very, very personable, and I highly recommend it. Matt, I have one question related to the grants. If you anticipate loss of business this summer, does that qualify you, or is it all about what has already happened and what you can prove?
You have to be able to show an impact from executive order that's already been in place. So you have to be able to document and show that impact. We have not required detailed financials to show that. We're asking the business or the nonprofit for them to be able to articulate and however they want to be able to show that there's an impact, but you do have to show it in some means or some way. You have to tell your story about how this has impacted you. If you're anticipating, and unfortunately, that's not something that's going to be allowed to get you to meet the criteria. But that being said, you can use the funds for operating expenses during the pandemic. And we did not put a deadline on that. As long as the pandemic's still going,
okay,
you can show an impact from the past. You can use it for operating expenses going forward as we're still in the pandemic.
Got it. And the pandemic is certainly not going to end abruptly anytime soon. So I think,
unfortunately,
right, that's pretty safe. Great. All right. Well, Matt, let's move on to one of the larger long-term topics we've broached many times already on the radio, the BWCA funding status. We haven't talked about this for a long time. I'm so curious if there's been any movement on this.
Yes, that's a great question. So just a reminder on that, the Boundary Waters funding, it goes in 10-year cycles. Boundary Waters gets reappraised. We get a new amount that we get for essentially a payment in lieu of taxes for the federal land that makes up the Boundary Waters. It's 0.75% of the value. If we appraised it in 2018, it dropped dramatically. It would have been a $1.3 million reduction in annual revenue for Lake County over the next 10 years each year. So we obviously appealed that. The Forest Service did go back, and they're going to do another appraisal, and there is a little news on that. So
great.
Finally have a contract with a new appraiser, and that just happened. Unfortunately, the appraiser's backlogged, and they're not going to be starting until spring of 2021. So we're expecting and hoping to have a chance to have an introduction meeting to provide our comments and input prior to March, which is coming up. So
yeah,
we're gearing up to be able to have that initial meeting and see who the appraiser is and give our feedback, and then they expect the work to be complete by fall into early winter of this year. So by the end of 2021, hopefully we're going to know what that payment's going to be. And again, our payment, they kept at the same level, even though the appraisal they did showed we should have a reduction. They kept it at the same level, but depending on what comes out of this appraisal, we may have to pay some of those dollars back if it comes back low again. And if it comes back at or higher, which would be wonderful, we won't have to. And this is every time I talk about it, wherever I'm at, it's a huge issue for us in our budget and our levy as we look to the future, the next 10 years. So if we can get an appraisal, which we think is right, which should be at or higher, or maybe just a tad bit lower than what the previous one was 10 years ago, it's going to make a huge difference in terms of what our levy is going to be and how we fund things moving forward. So it's a big deal. We're excited to be able to participate and provide all the information we can, and just kind of holding my breath to see what comes out of this by the end
of the year. Yeah, it is a big deal. And is there any specific role that the private citizen who cares about this issue can pay to it, Matt? Is there any opportunity to participate in this meeting, or maybe just to give you input?
Certainly people can give me input. There's probably not going to be any public sense of where the public can participate in it. I think we had to fight hard enough just to get ourselves to be able to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Participate in the process. So, but yeah, interested to hear from anybody if they have comments or thoughts on it as well.
I know when we talked about this before, it seemed to really come down to, you know, the Boundary Waters is, I mean, I wouldn't quite say priceless, but, you know, the value is cannot be determined simply by what it would cost if we put houses on it. And so we need to uphold that vision for this and other ways of looking at the Boundary Waters. And this will be a very telling year for us in that way. So I hope people are aware of the import of what you're talking about here. And I'm so glad you're able to share with us on the radio the ongoing saga of how it goes.
Yeah, and hopefully it's coming to a conclusion, and hopefully a good one.
Yes. All right, we are close to out of time, Matt, but I think one more question about valuation notices. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I just want to put a plug in for this. Valuation notices will be sent out with your tax statement this spring, as they always are, and that's a valuation notice for value, you know, 2021 for taxes payable 2022. And I just want to make a pitch that, you know, please look at that value and classification when you get it. If there's issues or concerns that you have with it, that is the time to bring them up with the assessor or go through that appeals process. And the reason I bring this up, because every year, you know, for the last 10 to 15 years that I've been doing this, every time at the end of the year when the proposed taxes come out and the budget and levy hearing come up in December, it seems like, and I understand why it happens, because then you see an actual number of taxes associated, and then people start looking back at their value and classification. Many times they're showing up at our meeting at the end of the year, and their ultimate concern is their value and their classification. There's nothing they can do about it at that time. So it's always a bad position to be in.
Right.
I hate having to tell people the time to do that was in March and April when you got that notice. So I just make that plea that when you get your tax statement, look at the yellow sheet, look at what that value is, how it's changed, what that classification is. If you have questions, please call the assessor. If you think there's issues or it's incorrect, that is the time to move through the process, not towards the end of the year when you get that ultimate tax statement. And we've been talking about, what are ways we can do things different? What can we do to try to help people see that or understand it? And we've had many conversations, and to me, I'm just going to keep trying to talk about it and make sure people are aware of it and look at it and ask questions at that time. So just kind of getting that message out there.
Absolutely. And I think last year when you said the same thing at the same time of year was when I definitely took notice of that. And so I think, you know, just a drum beat of information every year at this time will be really helpful. And we can even put something in community event announcements to remind people now's the time to take a serious look at what the county says your property is worth. So thanks for
Absolutely.
That reminder, Matt. And unless there's anything else, I think we're pretty much wrapping it up.
Yeah, of course I could keep talking, but I recognize time is up, and I just appreciate the ability to come on here and talk about a few things that are happening with the county.
Absolutely. We'll have you on again soon. Thanks, Matt.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Matt Huddleston. He is our county administrator, and he is a regular on KTWH. You're listening to What's Happening on KTWH 995, Low Power Two Harbors Community Radio Station. Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, Kenny Blumenfeld with Weather Tidbits. As promised, time for Kenny Blumenfeld, our senior climatologist at the Minnesota DNR. He's on the phone as he comes on just about every week for Weather Tidbits with us. Thank you so much, Kenny, for calling in this morning.
Yeah, always good to be here. How are you?
We are well. We have had quite a bit of sun, I would say, the last week, which I think has cheered everybody up. It is pretty... the snow definitely looks a little tired. We had more than the barest dusting since the great meltdown. Was that a week or so ago? Though now we hear there might be some new stuff coming, so things are looking up a little bit. But it has been cold just recently. It was about minus six this morning with a very brisk wind chill with the northwest. It always is, which felt good for January in northern Minnesota.
Yeah, you said it's been cold. It's really only cold by 2021 standards.
Right.
I was just looking, and I don't know what values came in this morning, but usually you can expect the lowest reading in the state to come in somewhere near Babbitt, or Embarrass, or Tower, or maybe Cotton. Those are kind of the perennial favorites for lowest temperature. And this entire winter, there's only been one station in Minnesota, and it's Cotton, to hit negative 30 Fahrenheit.
Hmm.
No other station. I mean, negative 30 is a threshold that's pretty impressive down here in the Twin Cities. If we get that, we think, whoa, we close everything. But in northern Minnesota, that's a real run-of-the-mill cold morning, and there's only been one station to record a negative 30 all winter. So just to kind of put some of that warmth we were talking about last week into perspective, typically there will be dozens of stations and or mornings. So if you just sort of list the 25 lowest temperatures recorded in the state during a winter, you're going to end up with maybe a total of 25 different stations and or dates that hit negative 30 or lower. And so for us to be at one right at the coldest time of the year is pretty remarkable. Usually you get someone who's hit, negative 42 or something like that, but we haven't even been close.
Huh.
It's been warm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe it takes negative 38 or 40 to actually put to permanent rest the emerald ash borer, which is an invasive that's been ransacking the Midwest and moving east. I don't know if you know details about that or if I'm correct on that, but that makes me a little worried for the spread of the emerald ash borer, even in northern Minnesota.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the EAB, the emerald ash borer's thresholds, but I know that the eastern large beetle, which is the one that has always sort of symbiotically ransacked the tamaracks, they get extra generation if the winter isn't cold enough, and then they really go to town. And so some of the foresters have been struggling with those tamaracks that, you know, they're not a real high-value tree, so there's not a tremendous amount in the timber industry, but they're, you know, people like looking at them, they're iconic. And they, in some of the warm winters, they've been hit very hard. And my understanding is the threshold for those, for mortality for that eastern large beetle is right around negative 35.
Hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me if there was a similar threshold for another, you know, predatory pest that, cold weather is one of the things that sort of keeps our ecosystems stable.
Keeps the riffraff out.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of saying it, but it you know, when you think of those people who like gardening, talk about the USDA plant hardiness zones, and those are actually just based on the lowest temperature of the year.
Oh.
And the zones have been shifting northward over time, and it's because the lowest temperature of the year has been getting higher. You know, it's not every single year. We certainly have our throwback winters and we'll have our setbacks, but the general trend has been for the coldest days to get warmer. And, so that does affect, you know, that obviously affects not only what can grow, but what can invade.
Yes.
So the people who managed the natural landscapes, they kind of, their ears perk up a bit when you start talking about really warm winter conditions, because it means that there's, maybe opening the door to some invasive species that otherwise wouldn't have been able to survive here.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. Kenny, when I look up our 8 to 14-day climate prediction, it continues to predict warm, far above normal warmth. So that makes me think the polar vortex is not coming our way anytime soon. Is that what would you say about that?
Yeah, I would agree that at least, you know, we're now in the end of the coldest part of January historically. And so if we don't get that brutal cold from that sort of polar vortex style invasion in the next 10 days, then we're probably not going to be seeing any real historic cold conditions in Minnesota this winter. And it just doesn't seem that likely anyway, that the writing's kind of been on the wall for the past several weeks.
Mm.
So this is sort of our chance. Now, there are signs that, that we are going to, that are maybe our dalliance with the really warm, mild winter might be winding down, and that we just resume more of a normal kind of, you know, winter. So instead of highs in the 20s and 30s, across the state, you know, on an almost daily basis, maybe highs in the teens,
mm-hmm.
and 20s in southern Minnesota, and some lows that are closer to zero, single digits in southern Minnesota, and maybe below zero in northern Minnesota. That does seem a little more likely for the next, on and off for the next few weeks. But you're right, it does look like there's a surge of mild air coming back in over the period that's about a week away or so.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have seen from those same charts, the weather models are definitely showing more activity, so more winter-type weather systems coming through. I think that northeast Minnesota is not going to hit the jackpot with this next one. It's going to hit southern Minnesota over the weekend. Parts like areas like the Twin Cities, we're looking at maybe 5 inches of fresh powder, which we're just, we're really excited about that. But as you do shift into a cooler air mass, you know, those transient weather systems become a little more common. And, you know, it's not hard when the temperatures are well below freezing and close to zero for a weak weather system to march through northeast Minnesota and easily squeeze out, you know, an inch or two of snow without much effort. So I'm hopeful that as we, you know, with the cold front now well to our south and a colder air mass in place, I am hopeful that the whole state can rejuvenate its snowpack a bit. You know, and the sunshine, as you mentioned, the sunshine has definitely been helping people out. But I know folks often think, well, if it's going to be cold, we might as well have snow.
Right.
We might as well have snow.
Right. And so do you, I mean, just to get down to specifics, do you to anticipate any snow for northern Minnesota on Saturday night, tomorrow night?
I do. I mean, for one, the weather system moving through has a kind of a nice long reach, so it's not super compact, and so it's going to spread a shield of snow across most of Minnesota. It's just going to be more concentrated in southern Minnesota. You know, I would say you got a coin flip shot of getting, you know, a half inch of snow or something like that, an inch of snow maybe in the Two Harbors area. Always a little bit more. I would never surprise if some place like Isabella, you know, winds up with a few inches.
Right.
If the winds are going to be pretty light, but any additional lift that you get, you know, as the air climbs up the Superior Ridge, could always give them a little extra snow. So I'd say your listeners, you'll maybe 5-6 out of 10 shot of seeing some snow, maybe a half inch to an inch with this one. But then you'll have more chances over the coming week. I don't see temperatures going above freezing.
All right.
By the time we talk next week, we should have stayed. Two Harbors should have stayed entirely below freezing. So that'll be a nice change.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thanks, Kenny. We're out of time, but it's been swell, and we'll chat again next week.
Yeah. Have a great weekend.
All right. Bye bye. That was Kenny Blumenfeld. He is our senior climatologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and he chimes in for us every Friday morning at around 9:20. So thanks, Kenny, for doing that.